here's a story from The World.
Ethiopia has been a bright spot in the developing world over the past two decades. Incomes, literacy, and life expectancy have all gone up dramatically. Ethiopia's economy got a kickstart thanks to some serious investment from China. But new fighting between Ethiopia's central government and the opposition party that governs the northern region of Tigray, this is presenting new and serious challenges. Journalist Mary Kay Magstad has been following the trail of Chinese investment around the globe in a podcast called China's New Silk Road. As we hear now, her reporting led her to Tigray, but she opens her story in Ethiopia's capital.
In the capital, Addis Ababa, Chinese projects abound. My travel companion is Tesfalem Waldyas, an Ethiopian journalist working with me to explore the impact of Chinese investment.
So, just walking distance, the newly built stadium is just on the other way.
So there's this Chinese-built tram?
Yes.
Chinese-built ring roads?
Yes.
Stadium?
And the financial district, many of the headquarters of Ethiopian banks are built by the Chinese.
In a cab later, driving around, it's clear how much Chinese construction in recent years has transformed the Addis Ababa skyline. Tess says many locals are impressed.
They said is that our city looks like Dubai now, and people are really surprised by the pace of building of such high buildings. So people are used to take pictures, admire the buildings, and they really loved it. They felt it like Addis Ababa is developing, Ethiopia is developing. Now we are catching the rest of the world.
There are two very different ways of looking at Chinese loans in Africa, and they're not mutually exclusive. One is that these help poor countries leapfrog forward. The other is that China is setting debt traps in at least some places, using the infrastructure itself, or sometimes the commodities the infrastructure produces, like oil, as collateral if the borrower can't repay the loan. Wherever you come down on this, it's fair to say that Chinese lenders are not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. Like many Western countries that have given similar loans before in Africa, China's state lenders expect to profit, to throw business to Chinese companies, and to gain stature and strategic positions in Africa. China's loans often have higher interest rates and shorter payback periods than those from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. So, something I've heard more than once while covering Chinese activities around the world is, you'd better know what you want when you come to the table, because the Chinese know what they want. Ethiopia's government wants a better life for its 110 million people. So it's taken at least $13 billion in loans from China out of its total $29 billion external debt. Economist Elamayahu Geda is not a flat-out fan of everything China's doing in Ethiopia, but neither does he think full-speed privatization is the best way forward for a country where almost a quarter of the population still lives in poverty. Another Ethiopian economist, Getachew Alemu, agrees.
Essentially, I see the Ethiopian economy as an economy that still needs huge public investment. Our markets are very hierarchical, very traditional, fragmented. So even if we wish to have a market-driven economy, we don't have the markets yet.
And he says China deserves credit for having come in early to fund some of those efforts at a time when many Western investors found Ethiopia and Africa in general to be too risky.
Economies like the Ethiopian economy are considered to be frontier markets for capital markets in the West because of the high risk involved in the market and the challenges around it. So although Western capital was considering Africa and Ethiopia as frontier markets, China was actually really courageous enough to kind of get involved in such a market. So it really helped us. We used to have a huge backlog of demand for infrastructure. We didn't have the finance to kind of finance it and push our economy forward. So the Chinese capital came as a savior for us.
I heard this a lot as I went around rural Tigray months before the conflict with the government erupted. These village kids also wanted to show off what they'd been learning in school. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Tess tells me when rural kids in Ethiopia see a foreigner, they often call out, China, China, because those are the foreigners they've seen here, building roads, putting up poles for electric lines, building the Tekezi Dam a decade ago, which now provides electricity, fish from the reservoir, and convenience for local villagers in Tigray. Another Chinese dam is now being built near Tigray's capital, Mekelle. Driving in from a steep hill above, you can see the contours of a dam that will help provide water to more than 300,000 people in Mekelle, instead of having to drill down hundreds of feet to find it.
From what I understand, we just talked to the Mekelle Water Office, and they said they only have about half as much water as they need right now. How much is this going to help close that gap?
After 3 years, the project will be functional, and the Mekelle people, the problem or the scarcity of the water is solved.
It'll be enough to make up for the water they do not have now.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
This is Hagos Bayru. He's an Ethiopian hydroelectric engineer working with the Chinese team that's building this dam.
Yeah, we took experience from the Chinese how to design the dam.
Chinese expertise helps, he says, though Ethiopian engineers like himself already knew a fair bit about building dams. What really helps is the Chinese loan that's covering about 80% of the cost of building this dam. The water from the dam will also help Mekelle's new Chinese-built industrial park. Goitom Kubrekadan is the general manager here.
I think this is a good view for...
This is a good view.
He takes us up to the roof of the one-stop office to get a panoramic view of the industrial park. Below, young women workers laugh and chat as they carry big sheets of plywood on their backs. Already, Goitom says, there are 3,500 workers here, and it'll go up to 20,000 at full capacity. There are Indian companies here making T-shirts and leggings, a Romanian-Bangladesh joint venture, and Chinese companies setting up.
So what kind of impact do you think this will have on the local economy?
A good boost for the economy because, for example, I am talking about 20,000 people, only the operators.
20,000 workers need food, housing, transportation. That's good for the local economy, too. And there are two new access roads.
One to the city, the second one to the airport, the big one, yeah, straight to the airport.
It's this kind of transformation of lives that can happen with investments and infrastructure done well that excites Daniel McConan, the deputy commissioner of Tigray's Investment Commission. He says he saw what can happen when he visited the Chinese city of Shenzhen near Hong Kong, a place that was once a collection of fishing villages and 40 years later is a cosmopolitan city of millions of people and a tech and innovation hub.
Shenzhen, 40 years back, it was a fisher society. Now it's becoming an industrial city. I like. Not only Tigray, not only Mekelle, Addis, Ethiopia, not only Addis, Nairobi. Every city of Africa, every city of the world to be as Shenzhen.
But the future has a way of throwing curveballs, and Tigray's future cooperation with China and plans for prosperity are on hold for the moment as it clashes with the federal government. That's a curveball for China, too, in its plans to have an economic and strategic presence in the Horn of Africa. And Ethiopia has, of late, been kind of a showcase country for Chinese investments. But over time, African enthusiasm about such investments has been tempered in some places by experience.
So unlike colonialism, where they were colonies and pawns, now countries are being much smarter and saying we will not be caught in this situation.
This is Parag Khanna. He's a global strategy advisor and author of books including The Future is Asian and Connectography, Mapping the Future of Global Civilization. Parag is a U.S. citizen, born in India, now living in Singapore, who's traveled widely on China's New Silk Road and beyond.
I think that what all of this comes down to is agency, right? At the end of the day, what Beijing and Washington are both missing and always miss, and what superpowers and empires in general historically tend to miss, is that those lesser states have agency, and they have a lot more confidence than they did before. And the more the global system becomes a geopolitical marketplace of multiple competing powers, the more agency these smaller countries can actually have because they get to practice this multi-alignment very actively. And therefore, if you want to win what you think is a bipolar struggle, you actually have to be much more active in courting these countries rather than giving them false choices.
China's Belt and Road Initiative is changing the world, just not always in the way China's leaders wanted or expected, and not only with China in the driver's seat. For all its imperfections, the Belt and Road Initiative may actually leave as its legacy a more multipolar world. And that, certainly, could be considered a win-win.
Mary Kay Magsad reporting there for the project on China's New Silk Road from the Global Reporting Center. Her reporting partner on that story we just heard is Tess Phelem Waldyez. They both join me now. Tess, let me start with you there in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. For many outsiders, it looks as if Ethiopia right now is embroiled in a civil war that risks spilling over into other parts of the Horn of Africa. What are you hearing today from the northern region of Tigray, where this conflict is unfolding?
What happened today is that in early morning, another rocket was fired to a northern city called Bahardar. It is the seat of the Amara regional government. There is no official statement that came from the federal government, but the TPLF took responsibility for rocket firing.
That's the Tigray People's Liberation Front.
So yesterday, before this incident happened, the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed gave the TPLF leadership. He gave 72 hours to surrender peacefully to the government. So within the next 72 hours, we might see the final showdown.
So I want to know more about how this growing conflict is kind of intersecting with China's interests in Ethiopia. So before we go deeper into this conflict, let's talk a bit about how Ethiopia has grown economically in the past 20 years. I was reporting in Ethiopia in 2005, and China was just really starting to dig in there. Since then, China has become the country's largest investor. So what is the big headline in terms of economic growth in Ethiopia over the past 20 years?
Ethiopia is one of the fastest growing country in the world. And China's contribution for that is immense, from building, from dams to highways to telecommunication infrastructures, a national stadium, football stadium. And wherever you go in the country, you'll find Chinese people, paving new roads, asphalted roads. And also, if you come to Addis Ababa, the skyline of Addis Ababa is totally changed now. Mm. It will be the financial district of Addis Ababa. Most of the buildings are now currently under construction by the Chinese construction companies. Mm.
No doubt I would not recognize it if I were to go. Mary Kay, you lived and reported from China for nearly two decades. You visited Tigray for this podcast. So given what you know about how China does business, what do you think Chinese authorities are thinking right now in light of the growing conflict in Tigray?
Well, hard to know what they're thinking, but the way they're playing it in government-controlled media is quite straight down the line. I will say, there are a number of Chinese projects that are already completed in Ethiopia, roads, a railway going from Addis Ababa all the way to the port of Djibouti, where China and the United States have military bases. There are all kinds of reasons why China wants a stable and peaceful Horn of Africa, because China's investments in the region are for strategic reasons as well as for economic reasons. So this isn't good from China's perspective that there is a conflict in a place where China has a lot of investment. But at this point, they're hanging back and letting it play out the way it's going to play out.
So a question for both of you. Let me put it to Mary Kay, you first. The Chinese government says it doesn't meddle in the internal affairs of other countries, but we know it has a history of doing so. How has that played out in Ethiopia?
The way the Chinese government, from my experience, seeing how the Chinese government kind of uses its influence in different countries, it doesn't tend to be in really public statements most of the time. It tends to be behind the scenes, and it tends to be with some leverage that it has. Because, for instance, in Ethiopia, there is something between $13 billion and even as much as $16 to $19 billion in loans owned to the Chinese government. There certainly is some leverage for the Chinese government to use one way or the other if things are not going the way that the Chinese government feels is in its best interest in places like Ethiopia.
Tess Phelem, are you concerned about China exerting influence in the affairs of Ethiopia, specifically around Tigray and the conflict there right now?
I don't think so. Tigray is one region of Ethiopia. Some people make it like a parallel, like
Hong Kong, or you can say Taiwan. So the Ethiopian federal government narrative is Tigray is like a rebellious group, is the one who is trying to destabilize the country. So I don't think so the Chinese government will spoil their relationship with the federal government because of one single region of the country.
Mary Kay, we've been following you around the globe over the past 2 months, from China to neighboring Kazakhstan and India to Southeast Asia, the Mediterranean, Latin America, the Arctic, even into cyberspace. Are there some main themes that you saw pop up periodically on this journey?
I think when we look at Chinese investment in Africa and Chinese investment, you know, more broadly, we tend to look at, you know, kind of like, you know, is this predatory? Is there a debt trap? Is this really good for those at the receiving end? And it's a mixed bag. You know, I mean, it's different in each country. There certainly are ways in which the Chinese government and Chinese lenders do look out for their own interests, as many lenders do around the world. But I think it's telling that the African survey group, Afrobarometer, found in 2016, which was pretty much at the height of Chinese lending to Africa, that more than 60% of Africans surveyed, and they surveyed Africans in several countries, found favorable views of China, that Africans thought favorably of China and of what China was doing in terms of investments in Africa. So I think as we look from outside, it's important to keep in mind that while Chinese investment is imperfect and its record is mixed, that it's not all bad. And in fact, in many places, including Ethiopia, it has transformed many lives for the better.
We've been speaking with Tesfalem Waldyez in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and Mary Kay Magstad in San Francisco. The entire 9-part podcast that traces Chinese investment around the world is called On China's New Silk Road. It's from the Global Reporting Center. Tess, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you too, Mary Kay.
Thank you, Marco.
From PRX.